News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning, morning, morning. It's 6 minutes after 8 o'clock. FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton. And somehow Dr. Bill says the weather's, like, the hurricane's kind of sort of on the way. Mm-hmm. And yet, a little rain today, but it's going to be sunny tomorrow. It doesn't make sense. We'll have a sunny day, and then again, then we turn back to blustery winds on Thursday, and we'll see. We'll hear from the doctor again in less than a half hour, with an eye on where and when that storm reaches us and how close it comes to us.
Yeah, the cold front has come and gone. It was nice for everyone that was out picking up debris after Hurricane Sally. And then the city and county crews for both Mobile and the cities in Baldwin County continued to try to pick up all that debris. And then just in time, another hurricane could be heading in our direction, Hurricane Delta. Right now, Dr. Bill seems fairly confident that it will make landfall late Friday night into Saturday morning on the southeast Louisiana coast, but things can change. It could track eastward, and then we'll be looking at another hurricane heading right in our direction.
And there seemed to be no consideration that it could move westward. It's either the Louisiana coast or closer to us, so we shall see. A man who's familiar with the Louisiana coast all the way to Mobile and many places, he's the author of the Matt Jones Trilogy, and of course you can find his work at the Washington Examiner and QuinnHillier.com, and he joins us on Tuesdays, and it's Quinn Hillier. And good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys. I figure if there's something coming and it's a delta punch, maybe it'll be a toga party.
I'm always down for one of those, Quinn, and you are invited to my next toga party. Now,
good.
When you before we talked to you, just before we came on the air, I asked Dan, I said, you know, have we talked to Quinn since the presidential debate? That was hard to believe, but that was Tuesday night. That was less than a week ago. It seems like it was 3 months ago. There's been so much news in the national news cycle that, yeah, it's been less than a week since that first debate. So let's start chronologically and talk about last Tuesday night's debate between President Trump and the challenger, former Vice President Joe Biden. And Trump came out swinging early, lots of interruptions. It seemed like that was part of the game plan to try to knock Joe Biden off course early in the debate. I guess give us your overall impressions for how both candidates fared, and let's start there.
Well, I think I join most people in thinking Biden barely hung on. In ordinary circumstances, everybody would say Biden had just sort of a, you know, May debate, but Trump was god awful and really hurt his cause. The polls are showing the same thing. The worst thing Trump did from a political tactical standpoint was he rescued Biden the few times that Chris Wallace, the moderator, had Biden on the ropes and was asking Biden a tough question, and Biden was not had not started a very good answer, and Trump jumped in and interrupted him then too, rather than letting Biden hang himself. And there were some questions Biden, the reason he had started having trouble answering them was he doesn't have good answers for them. And if Trump had just sat back and let Chris Wallace hone in, then I think Biden would have hurt himself. But that didn't happen, and Trump is now really behind the eight ball.
Quinn, it's one thing to not have good answers. It's another thing to maybe have deeper cognitive issues. So, you know, sometimes I don't have a good answer, but I haven't lost my marbles. So, you know what I'm getting at here. Did he not have good answers because of his own health?
No.
Look, abilities?
Even Britt Hume, who has for months been saying he thinks Joe Biden is senile, said on Fox News right after the debate, well, clearly he didn't sound senile tonight. He had all of his faculties. Look, there's a difference, as I've said, I think twice on this show in the last couple of months, there's a difference between getting old and therefore, you know, sort of getting tired more easily, and then when you get tired, you know, you're not as sharp. There's a difference between that and dementia. Joe Biden does not have dementia. And he showed, you know, they probably had him, had him change his sleep patterns so that it didn't seem like it was as late in the day as it was to him. And so, you know, they got him when he was up. But he was making sense.
Mm-hmm.
He just, when I say he didn't have good answers, I mean, substantively, there are some chinks in his armor. Where he has taken positions or done things that make him look bad, and he still doesn't have an answer for those things, and yet Trump would not let Chris Wallace press Biden on those things. One of which is the
I can bring up one, and I think that Trump might have rescued Biden from this one when the talk of riots and protests came up.
Oh, yes.
And they mentioned Antifa, and I think Biden said, Antifa is not an organization, it's an idea. What was your take on that?
And you know what? In a sense, he is right. But see, when because it doesn't have a formal organizational structure, and even the FBI director who was blasting Antifa said something similar to that. The problem is, as Chris Wallace was about to get into, whether it's an organization or it's an idea, it's still, you know, whether it's a loose confederation, it's still an entity that's doing great harm.
Right.
What would you do about it? And Biden does not have a good answer for that other than, well, I condemn violence. Well, so does everybody, Joe. You know, tell us how you're going to actually stop these thugs from mayhem. And he doesn't have an answer to that, and yet Trump let him off the hook.
Yeah, I think, you know, Antifa is pro-anarchy, and by definition, anarchists don't like any kind of organization, although there is, you know, there is a template that's been set for a lot of these protesters, and they have, you know, little groups that they discuss things with, where they're going to go, where they're going to protest and riot next. But I also felt that, you know, a lot of people felt that Chris Wallace was maybe more on the Biden side of things in the debate last Tuesday night, and part of that comes from his questioning again, same question that he, believe it or not, asked President Trump during the 2016 debates, whether he would condemn white supremacy. And, you know, the president, even though he seemed to kind of dance around it a little bit Tuesday night, but the more I rewatch it, he was saying, yeah, I condemn it. Tell me what group specifically you want me to condemn. And Biden said Proud Boys. And then, of course, the clip that was cut from that was Trump saying stand back and stand by. But there have been times in the past where Trump has condemned white supremacy in whatever form that is, and he did it again after the debate. Did you feel like that was a question that needed to be asked during the debate last Tuesday night?
Yes and no. It was a little bit out of context when he asked it, but there is a growing threat of white supremacist violence. The statistics show it. The problem, and what Trump was trying to get at, I think, other than just being a jerk, anytime he's asked about it, even if he says some words like, sure, I condemn it, you see him get coiled up and like he's a fifth grader being told to, you know, to eat his asparagus or something. His body language is no, I don't want to do this. But that's just sort of him being obstinate. He doesn't like being challenged on anything. What I think he was trying to get at, to give him the benefit of the doubt, is that whatever the problems with white supremacists, which are there, right now the bigger problem is the street protests of the left. They're the ones doing more violence. They're the ones killing more people. And Wallace wasn't asking about that. And look, Antifa might not be an organization, but Black Lives Matter is. Not the slogan, but the organization. And as I have shown in a column that got a lot of play, and I wasn't original with it, but I pulled it together, Black Lives Matter as an organization was founded by three communists
mm-hmm.
whose whose mentors were communist terrorists. Terrorists.
Right.
The domestic terrorists. And two, you know, basically to this day, as late as last year, one of the three founders of Black Lives Matter was singing the praises of one of these communist terrorists and saying, that is our model. Well, you know what? That is a legitimate question to ask, and it's legitimate to ask Joe Biden if he will denounce Black Lives Matter the same way you ask Trump if he will denounce David Duke or the Proud Boys. And that question was not asked.
That's a fair point.
Biden.
Fair point. Well, now we've established the fact that Antifa does not have a clubhouse on Grand Bay Wilmer Road or any kind of a regional headquarters anywhere, I guess, right?
Right. And like I said, that debate seems like it was months ago. Of course, a lot has happened since, and we'll talk with Quinn when we get back about the COVID diagnosis of the president.
817 FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. It is Mobile Mornings. Morning, y'all. It is Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on FM Talk 106.5 at 8:22 with our guest, author, and columnist Quinn Hillier. He's on with us every Tuesday. Thanks again, Quinn. How are you guys doing? How's everybody in your camp considering COVID and hurricanes and that sort of stuff?
So far, so good, although this hurricane looks like it could, you know, ruin some more plans of ours, just like everybody else in this region. But, you know, health of my family is good, so, you know, got to be thankful for that.
Yeah, certainly thankful for that. And hopefully Hurricane Delta will stay west of us. We'll hear more from Dr. Bill throughout today and the rest of the week. But speaking of, you know, changing plans, we're less than a month until the general election, and the big news last week was not the debate, but what happened after the debate. And President Trump, along with quite a few people in his inner circle, testing positive for COVID-19. Of course, he spent the weekend at Walter Reed Military Hospital and arrived back at the White House last night. But your most recent, or one of your most recent articles, Quinn, you said Trump's COVID-19 result makes argument against early voting. And we're already seeing what some people are saying, record numbers of absentee ballots being returned. Of course, there's the mail-in voting controversy in a number of states. But you're saying that what happened with President Trump late last week shows why we don't need early voting. Can you explain that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, there's a difference between, you know, unsolicited and mass widespread mail-in balloting and traditional absentee voting, where you have to specifically request it. You have to give a reason. There's lesser numbers, et cetera, et cetera. I'm all for, you know, making some provision for absentee balloting. But this widespread use of massive mail-in voting is problematic because it really does make vote fraud easier. I could go to town on that one. It causes all kinds of logistical nightmares for incompetence in addition to fraud. And because, and this is the argument I made in the column, not everybody is therefore acting on the same information. It's a communal cultural declaration of the popular will for people to vote on one day with the same information. And it's a civic ritual. There's all kinds of good things about it, but it also means that you don't get a situation where people vote a month ahead of time in mass, and then something happens in that next month that would have entirely changed their mind.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if Trump had become incapacitated or, Lord forbid, died from this virus, then all of those millions of votes that have been cast with Trump as the candidate would have been wasted. You don't know how many of those people might have voted against Trump just because they hate Trump, but if Pence were there, they might say, well, I like his policies better, and they might have voted for Pence, or vice versa. How many people would, you know, are totally enthusiastic about Trump, and if he's not at the top of the ticket, you know, they've already voted for him, but if he's not at the top of the ticket, they might have said, well, you know, I'll just stay home or go to the tavern and have a beer.
Right.
So not everybody is working off of the same information. Plus, if one of the candidates actually has died, it's not just that they might change their mind. It's literally a spoiled ballot, and And that means that it adds even more uncertainty, and it is not, therefore, reflective of the actual will of the people on Election Day. And that's a very, very bad thing, a very dicey thing for our republic. So it's a terrible idea.
And it certainly seems to me from all the video and watching President Trump upload videos to his Twitter page, he is well on his way to recovery.
Right.
But that's something that came up in a conversation with my wife and I. She said, you know, what if the president had died from this, or what if Joe Biden had died from this? What would have been the process? I mean, we're less than a month out. Would they have automatically stuck Pence on the ticket for the Republicans, or, you know, what would we have done, or what would we do if something were to happen to one of the candidates, not just in this election, but any time in the future?
Well, that's a separate column that I wrote, because there actually is no answer for that right now. And I said, because the Constitution does not cover it, this is one of those few gaps where there really is no answer. I suggested legislation, and I made a basically one-sentence operative clause that says that in the event of a death of a candidate or incapacity, that any vote cast for that person shall be deemed to have been voted for either the replacement named by the National Committee, or if the National Committee doesn't act, then for the vice presidential nominee. You make that national legislation, and you know what? You do it unanimously, bipartisan in Congress, because it could happen to either side. And for once, it's time for people to throw aside their partisan hats and say, you know what, this could happen to either one of us. We need to fill in this gap in the Constitution. I think it can be done in simple legislation, and I think people should look into it.
Man, it seems now would be the time to do that, not at the point in the future where this might actually happen, whether it's 2024 or 2028. I mean, you know what I'm saying. But now would be the time to do that, when Trump seems to be doing fine now after his COVID diagnosis and Biden tested negative. So I'm right there with you. I think they need to go ahead and make that happen. And, you know, you mentioned Mike Pence. There is a debate tomorrow night. You have the VP, Mike Pence, facing off against the candidate, Kamala Harris. How do you predict this goes? And will voters actually be swayed by a vice presidential debate?
Well, they were in, for instance, 2004, when Bush had a really bad first debate, W did, and then people forget this, but Cheney went against John Edwards, the Democratic VP nominee, and Edwards came off looking like a jerk, and Cheney, who had been portrayed as Darth Vader, came across as calm and reasonable and even likable. And he saved the campaign.
I remember that. And little did we know what a jerk Edwards was. He was just beginning to slightly reveal himself during that debate. But things got a whole lot worse, Quinn.
Exactly. So, look, I'm a big fan of Mike Pence. I don't want to jinx him. But every time Kamala Harris got in a debate during the primary, she lost ground in the polls.
Hmm.
She turns people off. Mike Pence is very, very steady, just like Cheney was. And I think Pence still has a chance to save Trump's campaign, because I think Kamala Harris is going to make people say, I don't want any of that.
Author of the Matt Jones trilogy. You can see his work at the Washington Examiner and QuinnHilliard.com. Quinn, thanks for your time. And where can folks pick up the Matt Jones trilogy?
Google my name and Matt Jones at Amazon.
Very good. Quinn, thanks for your time again today.
Thank you.
Every Tuesday, Quinn Hillier with his opinions, and they're strong. And again, just read up on Quinn, and read his stuff before Tuesday so you have an idea where we're going with him, right?
Exactly right. Well, we've got another storm to worry about, Dan. Hurricane Delta now making its way into the Yucatan Peninsula and then up into the Gulf. We'll have more on that coming back, right?
Dr. Bill Williams on the when and where of Delta, at least right now. That's up in about 5 minutes on FM Talk 106.5.
A36 FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. Right now it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing great. So still sitting here at the beginning of the month of October, and I know that you guys have some great deals through General Motors right now. Tell us about those.
That's right. We got $6,000 rebates on pickup trucks now. I mean, you know, and those are AT4s, and we only got a few 20s left. We got some 21s coming in. Got the 21 Yukon here now. Don't forget about us over here in the used car department. So we got, you can check all those out at McConnellAutomotive.com online. We finally got a bunch of trucks in. Got a lot of SUVs if you're in the market for the SUVs. We got them coming through the shop. Want to thank everybody for coming in yesterday, and hope this goofy storm stays out of here, and we'll keep selling a few cars.
Yeah, you guys do that well at McConnell Automotive. You also buy cars. If someone, you know, maybe they're not interested in the trade, they just want to get rid. They just want to get rid of their vehicle. You guys can make that happen too.
That's right. Just give us a call, Gene or I, at 251-476-4141. Give us the VIN and the miles, and we'll buy you one right off the. We'll buy it for it from you.
All right.
Mess that one up.
Sounds good. Well, get back to work, Louie. We appreciate your time with us this morning.
Yeah, I got to do that. Thank you.
All right. That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
FM Talk 106.5, it's Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, looking over a few local notes and items here today, and of course, our eyes are on the Caribbean and soon in the Gulf of Mexico with Hurricane Delta. That will be a local story at some point this week, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Also, the city of Bayou La Batre says that COVID exposure has postponed the opening of the FEMA registration site down there. This comes from WPMI. In a Facebook post, the city says that FEMA employees are currently being tested and will return to the site as soon as possible. So that's one FEMA site down.
So, yeah, that's okay. That makes more sense now, because in an update about these different FEMA centers, there are a lot that are shutting down or may have already shut down in preparation for the possibility of Hurricane Delta coming into our area. And Bayou La Batre here in Mobile County is one of those. They are currently closed, like Dan just said, but right now they are planning on resuming operations this coming Monday, October 12th, beginning at 8 a.m. But a lot of folks over in Baldwin County are still seeking assistance from FEMA, and they've had three of those FEMA mobile registration intake centers there in Baldwin County, and most of those are closing by tomorrow night. So one in Fairhope actually closed last night at 6 p.m. That's the one on Fairhope Avenue, and reopening for that FEMA center is still yet to be determined. But one in Foley at the Foley Courthouse, that will close tomorrow night at 6 p.m. as they prepare for Hurricane Delta, and they're planning on resuming operations 8 a.m. next Monday, the 12th. Same for the one in Robertsdale that's on Palmer Street. That closes at 6 p.m. Wednesday night and will resume operations on Monday at 8 a.m. And then one in Escambia County, Alabama, at the Atmore City Hall, they will also close tomorrow night at 6 p.m. and resume operations next Monday at 8 a.m. So it's kind of ironic, right, that FEMA is here to help and help with the recovery from Hurricane Sally, and then we have another hurricane possibly heading towards our area, definitely heading towards the Gulf Coast, and FEMA has to close down their centers because of the new hurricane.
They've got to shutter their doors just like the rest of us. Mm-hmm. It's just a physical property, and it's not they're not a superpower. They've got to make sure that they're safe in the middle of all this as well. How about mental health? A story from PMI also, Alta Point Health says that after Hurricane Sally struck, there was a big uptick in calls for help. Japonica Bryant works with people experiencing psychiatric emergencies there. People are calling about anxiety and depression, dealing with storm anxiety. Mm. Now, that was after Sally, and you can imagine we're going to have more of that coming up. So we always talk about the physical health, physical well-being, how's your property doing. There are going to be emotional and mental health issues that go along with yet another storm coming this way.
There's been, you know, so many stories from not only Hurricane Sally, but from the COVID-19 shutdowns that are just devastating to read. You know, families whose businesses have gone under, people who, because of the storm, you know, had major damage to their house to the point where it's unlivable and you have to spend so much money if insurance doesn't cover certain parts. I mean, there's some awful stories from 2020, just as a whole, from COVID-19 and from Hurricane Sally. So I can totally believe that there's been more calls about anxiety and mental health due to, you know, just a number of things that have happened this year.
And they're there to help. I mean, that's what Alta Point is. They're not saying, hey, stop calling. They're not saying that. They're just recognizing the fact that the number of calls is up.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're feeling something like that, don't be scared to reach out to somebody like that and have them help you out.
So Dr. Bill tells us the where and when of the latest hurricane, Delta, as far as the Gulf Coast. Talked to us earlier today, and this is what he had to say.
And now it appears that the landfall, at least as we look at it now, will be Friday night, early Saturday morning on the Louisiana coast, most likely the eastern portion of the Louisiana coast, and that will most likely occur around midnight or into the very early hours of Saturday. Now, once it approaches the coast, it may actually lose some strength because the waters along the coast have been roughed up from previous tropical activity, and they're not quite as warm as they were, say, a month ago. And as a result, it may lose a little bit of strength, but still be a Category 2 when it makes landfall in Louisiana. Then on Saturday, it will track through southeast Louisiana into Mississippi, up through the eastern portion of Mississippi on Saturday. We will be on the eastern side, at least as things look right now. We will be on the eastern side, and therefore we can expect, of course, periods of heavy rain beginning Friday night and through Saturday. And we at least can experience tropical storm force winds. That means we see some gale force gusts of 40 to perhaps 50 miles per hour. Hurricane force winds will likely be over Louisiana, and maybe some gusts affecting portions of Mississippi near the Louisiana border. So that's the way it looks now. It appears that it'll be far enough away, so we will keep those hurricane force winds to the west. Any slight turn more to the northeast could bring that storm a lot closer to Mobile on the Friday night and Saturday. But right now, it looks like a target for the Louisiana coast.
Dr. Bill Williams, about an hour ago.
Yeah, and Dr. Bill seems more confident in the track of Hurricane Delta than anyone was for the track of Hurricane Sally. And, you know, talking with him, it sounds like that confidence comes from the speed that Delta is expected to move through the Gulf. I think the most recent speed he had on that storm was that it was moving at about 15 miles an hour. If you remember, as Sally made its way and made landfall over Gulf shores, it was crawling at 2 to 3 miles per hour for most of that time. A huge difference.
Big difference.
And he seems fairly, and I say fairly confident, that it will make landfall on the Louisiana coast. Of course, even if that's the case, we're on the eastern side of the storm, like he just said, and that brings a number of issues, but there's still a very real possibility that the storm could track eastward and could be coming right up in our area. So we'll be talking with Dr. Bill throughout the day today and also throughout the rest of the week as we keep eyes on this storm.
So you might be putting some debris on top of your debris. I mean, that's just the way it's going to go. And I know, especially in Baldwin County, there's a lot of folks with a big mess that they're trying to deal with.
Yeah, there's so many trees and so many limbs and fences and, I mean, people that had, you know, trees fall into their houses, that it's just going to take a long time for the county of Baldwin County, County of Mobile, City of Mobile, all the cities in Baldwin County to pick up all of that debris. Some of the most recent updates, I know Fairhope said last night that they removed about 20% of their estimated 400,000 cubic yards of debris. City of Mobile, as of last night, had removed more than 47% of the 381,000 cubic yards of debris. And just to show you how big that is, Chris Francis with Chris Francis Tree Care says a dump truck can carry about 20 to 32 yards. We're talking about 400,000 yards of debris that need to be picked up.
Wow. FM Talk 106.5, turning up your voice and your text too, 343-0106. Feel free. It's 851 FM Talk 106.5. Taking a look through the local lens. We've got a few things going on here today.
Yeah, and of course, most of the discussion during election season has been about the big November general election, of course, with President Trump squaring off against the candidate for the Democratic Party, Joe Biden. And but you know what affects us more, a lot of the times, more than some of these big national races are our local municipal races. And polls are open today for a few of those. You have a race in Spanish Fort between incumbent Mayor Mike McMillan. He's facing challenger Rebecca Cornelius. In Daphne today. Robin Lejeune and Steve Carey are facing off in their mayoral race. And, you know, polls opened at 7 this morning, and they'll be open until, I believe, 7 tonight. But if you haven't cast your vote yet and you're still on the fence for who you plan on voting for in that Daphne mayoral race, today on the Jeff Poor Show, he's going to have both candidates talking with him. So at the 10 o'clock, at right around 10 o'clock, Jeff will be talking with Robin Lejeune, who's the Daphne City Council president and candidate for mayor. And then at right around 10:30, he'll be talking with the other candidate, Steve Carey. So make sure you put that on your list of things to listen to if you're still planning on voting in today's election. And then you have a couple other races in our area. In Pritchard, the incumbent mayor, Jimmy Gardner, is facing off against City Councilman Lorenzo Martin. And in Chickasaw, they have another race, Barry Broadhead taking on Bill Vallon for their mayoral race there. So four local elections today, and you can vote until 7 p.m. tonight, of course, if you are a citizen of that city.
Yeah, it's not like you just get all jacked up and excited and you know, vote in all four. Mm-hmm. You can only vote in the one that you where you live, so don't think you can influence all these elections. Vote if you live in Daphne and get to the polls and take care of that. They've been open for almost 2 hours now. That will be an interesting, some interesting conversations Jeff's going to have, and I, you know, Jeff gets a chance to talk to a lot of people that are on state and national stages, mm-hmm. and yet at the same time, I like the fact that he finds it interesting to cover and closely monitor these local elections. He's had a chance to be over in Daphne for their forum, mm-hmm. and Sean Sullivan did the same thing in Spanish Fort. But I think that's the essence of FM Talk 106.5, right?
Oh, yeah.
Local
no
talk, understanding local situations, local conditions, local weather conditions with Dr. Bill, and on and on and on it goes. And local businesses, too. I think that to this being a local business, we do our best to support all of you that have got businesses here locally and are owned locally. And we realize that you're in a tough spot right now, and you may be looking for leadership at the local level to help guide you through.
Yeah, well said, well said. And, you know, one of the guests that Jeff had on yesterday is Junior Senator Doug Jones, who, of course, is in a big race right now against the Republican candidate Tommy Tuberville, and we'll head to the polls on November 3rd. Unless you're one of the hundreds that have already filled out your absentee ballot and turned those in, they are expecting, they said, record numbers of absentee ballots in Alabama this year. But a new poll out yesterday from Auburn University at Montgomery, and their political science department there does these polls fairly often, and it shows right now Tommy Tuberville, the Republican candidate, with a big lead over the incumbent Senator Doug Jones. Right now, according to this most recent poll, Tuberville up by 12 percentage points. And of course, there's less than a month until Election Day. 12 points is a lot of ground for Jones to have to make up. They said the margin of error for this is right around 4%, so that 12% means that Tuberville does have a pretty big lead right now. They said he's getting 54% of the vote in the polls compared to 42% for Doug Jones. And then even less surprising would be the presidential race and how Alabamians plan to vote for that. President Trump has a major lead. Now, Alabama, not exactly a battleground state for this upcoming election.
No, it doesn't pretend to be.
No, not at all. So Trump, I believe their numbers have him with over a 20-point lead over Joe Biden in the state of Alabama. So they're not expecting any surprises as far as the presidential race. But right now, Tuberville leading by a pretty wide margin over Doug Jones.
And as far as the presidential race, I read somewhere or heard this recently that Alabama, the margin of or maybe it was in 2016, but in any event, Alabama is as large a Trump state as there is mm-hmm. in the country. It may have to do with the projections with the polls right now going into this election, that in the state of Alabama, the lead is as wide for Trump as it is in any of the other 49 states.
Yeah, I believe for that 2016 election, the margin of victory for Trump in Alabama was either first or second for him among all states. So Alabama, definitely heavy red, and especially when Trump is on the ballot. And of course, there's been a lot of talk. You know, yesterday, the president returned to the White House after his stay at the Walter Reed Military Hospital. And, oh, the hot takes were out from the national media folks yesterday. You know, the president, he got back on Marine One and took the short trip back to the White House. He stepped off of Marine One, was wearing his mask as he walked towards the White House. You know, he walked across the lawn and then up about two stories of stairs to stand out on the balcony where he took his mask off and then waved and was filmed by the camera crews and all of that. And there were so many people that said, oh, look at him. He's out of breath. He's struggling with this disease. You know, he just walked up two stories of stairs, and he's 74 years old, not exactly the fittest man in the world already. So I did not find that surprising. He was having a little trouble breathing yesterday.
Here's what Bradley Byrne had to say on Jeff's show yesterday about Trump and the virus.
Well, it only has an impact in this sense. The national news media needs something new every week to beat on with him, because after they beat on him with something for a while, it kind of loses its potency. And so they're going to beat on him now with this, saying, oh, if he had followed what all the public health professionals said about wearing a mask, if he hadn't done outdoor rallies, da-da-da-da-da, then he wouldn't have gotten sick and all these people around him would have gotten sick. That's what it does. It just gives them something new to try to use against him. But I haven't seen, looking at state-by-state polls, and that's what I look at this point in the election. You know, this is not a popular vote election. This is a state-by-state electoral college vote. Now, I haven't seen yet any appreciable change in the state polls, and so I think this is probably another one of those media things that they're making a big deal of. Now, we're all concerned about the president, obviously, and about other people around the president who've gotten this disease, but it sounds like he's getting good treatment at Walter Reed. Those are incredibly good folks there. I've just been so impressed with them. And, you know, I expect he'll make a full recovery, and I hope he gets back out in a position where he can campaign as soon as possible.
Bradley Byrne, who was on Jeff Ford's show yesterday, he's always got the great guests.
Yeah, he sure does. And look who's coming up next, Jeff Porcia, right
after
this.
How about that? Yeah. We'll promote our guy. He's on the way next, FM Talk 106.5. And Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig, more on Hurricane Delta with Dr. Bill throughout the day today, and certainly live on our show tomorrow.